Welcome to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a weekly roundtable discussion of events and issues facing the church and culture today. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Diocese of Colorado Springs and the Catholic Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs.
Hello, brothers and sisters. This is Bishop Michael Sheridan. Welcome to our program. Today, I'm going to be visiting with Chris Massarotti. Nice Italian name.
You bet.
And Chris is a native Coloradan, right?
From Trinidad.
Born in Trinidad, now living in Longmont. And Chris is by background and by training an electrical engineer.
Correct.
But that's not why you're here today, Chris, to talk about electrical engineering. Chris has produced a very fascinating documentary film, a documentary film called The Miracle of the Pococha. And if you don't know what the Pococha is, neither did I till about a week ago. And when I saw Chris's video, the Pococha is a Peruvian submarine, correct?
Correct. Right. Formerly the USS Atoll.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll be able to fill us in on this. But the miracle of the Pococha has to do with a very serious naval maritime disaster, really, that occurred, and how a number of the sailors, the crew of the Pococha, would otherwise clearly have been marked for death because the Pococha sank in deep waters. There was no real way to save it or the people in there. But this also has to do with a miracle that was accepted by the Holy See for the beatification of a Croatian nun. Also, I have to admit, Chris, unknown to me, she was beatified by Pope John Paul II, Blessed Maria
Petkovic.
Blessed Maria Petkovic, of the Daughters of Mercy, the Congregation of the Daughters of Mercy. So we're going to learn a lot, both about the Pococha as well as Blessed Maria. And why don't we start off, Chris? How does an electrical engineer come to do a video about a miracle that occurred on a Peruvian submarine?
Under normal circumstances, he doesn't. But my friend Jerry got me a gift subscription to Zenit, the Zenit Press Service. For those of you that don't know what that is, that's a Vatican press service. So it's the daily news is seen through the eyes of the Vatican. So where in the secular news you'll hear about various things, you'll hear about many of those things in Zenit, but you'll also hear about things that are particular to the church, like martyrdoms or various things in coming out in church rules and stuff like that. So I was reading on June 6th, 2003, my Zenit article, which for those of you historians is the anniversary of D-Day. And Pope John Paul the Great was in Dubrovnik, Croatia, beatifying a Croatian nun named Maria Petkovic of the Crucified Jesus. And it talked about how Pope John Paul II was commending her for her feminine genius, which was the genre you hear a lot in his writings.
Yes, right.
And he commended her for this. And he talked about how she founded these orphanages, and it was a really touching story. But what really grabbed me was the miracle that was accepted for beatification, because there was a second article beneath it that said Peruvian submarine crew owes its life to Croatia's first beatified woman. And the subtitle was Peruvian officer prayed and then did the humanly impossible. And I'm like, what? So I read that story, and it talked about how this Peruvian submarine crew aboard the BAP Pococha.
What year was this?
1988.
So it's really in our time.
It's contemporary.
It's a very modern story and modern miracle.
Exactly. In fact, I was living in this town when that accident happened. Anyway, how these guys were trapped, and this lieutenant closed this hatch against superhuman forces. And he was showing his Medal of Honor for Valor, and it says this in the Zenit article. And when he's showing them his Medal of Honor for Valor, he points to this card, this picture of Maria that he has, and he says, "The merit is hers." And that just really touched my heart. It's like, because I'm a guy, right? I'm an engineer, and I'm a guy. So you got this weapon of war that's in distress, and yet you've got this beautiful little Croatian nun who's done these magnificent things, and and she intervenes. Her prayer intercession intervenes. And there's a lot about that story I didn't know, but it really touched me. It just moved my heart.
Let's go back to the beginning, Chris. The Pococha, Peruvian submarine. What's going on? What's the context for this accident, this maritime accident?
Well, a little background is the Pococha, the Battle of Pococha was a battle off the coast of Peru in the 1870s, I believe it is. And a Peruvian boat successfully withstood two British Royal cruisers in this battle to a standoff, which for anybody in that time was a victory if you could fight the Brits to a standoff in anything. So that was a famous Battle of Pococha. And that's what that submarine was named after. So when they bought the USS Atoll, they named it the Pococha. So she was coming in from a training exercise, and she had just done a torpedo run where they would fire these unarmed torpedoes at destroyers, and then the destroyers would track her. And they were preparing for the UNITOS operations with the United States. So they were coming home. It was Friday night. They'd finished the operation. Everything was going well. And they were only 3 miles from port. And they started to see this bright light coming at them or changing bearing. And normally, a ship in transit is supposed to have all its lights off and only its navigation lights on so that you can see what the bearing of the ship is, right? That's the way things work. So anyway, the Pococha is coming in at 135 degrees, coming into port, and they realize this vessel's moving, but they can't quite make out the bearing. Well, they finally realize they're coming straight at us. So according to the rules of the road, the Pococha's coming in, and the Kiowa Maru is leaving port at 270 degrees. Because they're coming in on the Pococha's port side, the Pococha is the privileged vessel. So she's required by law to maintain course and speed, so as not to confuse them with an abrupt maneuver. So the Kiowa Maru was supposed to turn to her starboard side, to the right, which is to the Pococha's left, basically, to go for the wake, to avoid a collision, right? So they finally realize, after minutes and minutes, these guys don't even see us. So finally, they blew their horn and they made a break for it to their starboard to try and avoid the collision. And they almost made it, but it didn't work. They didn't execute the maneuver in time. So the Kiowa Maru had a battering ram, basically. It was an icebreaker for deep sea fishing. So they struck the Pococha in the second to the last compartment on the port side. It's called the maneuvering room. It's the smallest compartment in the submarine. And normally, I think that if that would have been the only thing that happened, they could have blown all their ballast tanks and maybe even come into port. Certainly it wouldn't have endangered the lives of everybody. But what happened was, it was kind of a domino effect. So when the collision happened, it warped the bulkhead to the rear torpedo room, so they couldn't close, they couldn't seal that compartment. So that doomed the rear two aft compartments to flood. Well, the sensitivity of balance on a submarine, it's so sensitive that when you fire a torpedo, you have to instantly fill a ballast tank to offset that. That's called longitudinal stability. So when those two compartments started to flood, they tried blowing the ballast tanks, and it worked for a while, but as the compartments flooded, there was way too much water to offset through the ballast tanks. So she began to sink. So the captain ordered Roger Katrina to declared a closing alpha maneuver, which is close all hatches and watertight doors. So he sent three guys to the rear of the submarine as far as they could go to do that. So they got as far as the maneuvering room, right? Well, they got as far as the rear engine room, which is next to the maneuvering room. That was closed, and they closed everything. So they're waiting in the rear engine room.
I just want to ask you, the hatches, now of course the submarine is above water. Now we're not below.
Correct.
The hatches are open?
Actually, the hatches are supposed to be closed when you're coming into port.
Right.
So.
But they weren't?
I understand what you're asking. There's a clarification. So there's the hatches on the deck, and then there's the watertight doors between compartments. To be honest with you, I don't know what the protocol is for the watertight doors inside.
But the ones
on top were closed.
They were closed.
Yes.
All right.
So when the collision happened, though, people started coming out of them to go see on the deck what happened, right? Men begin to try and deal with a fire broke out. So the maneuvering room is where all the bus bars come together for the electrical distribution of the entire submarine. So when that thing flooded, they shorted out and they lost power. And so there was a fire in the maneuvering room. So guys were running around with extinguishers trying to figure out what to do. Keep in mind, the submarine sank in about 10 minutes. So there's not a lot of reaction time, right, to do all this stuff that needs to be done. So anyway.
Hey, before you go on, Chris, I just wanted to say that I've seen this video that you've done, this film. And you know, I think you're doing a great job of explaining it, but I can imagine listeners trying to picture this in their mind. So that's why we want to recommend that they... because that they see the film, because
yes.
it everything is very well diagrammed and explained. Speaking of which, this documentary that you did is going to be shown on EWTN, correct?
Correct.
Give us the times.
You bet. It's going to be broadcast on EWTN at 8 p.m. Mountain Time, our time, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, 7 Pacific. And that's the Wednesday night between Christmas and New Year's, so it's easy to remember.
December 28th.
29th?
Is it 29th?
It's the 29th.
Okay. December 29th.
Wednesday, December 29th.
Okay.
Bill, check us on that. I'm pretty sure that's right.
December 29th.
And it's on their website as well.
Okay.
So if you log on to EWTN's website and you go to the, was it the live events, if I remember correctly?
Okay.
And then we'll broadcast again. For those of you revelers, it'll be... broadcasting again at 4:30 a.m. on New Year's Day. So you can watch that. And for those people in Australia, I guess that's about 6 or 7 p.m. at night there.
Probably.
So, yeah, something like that. So it should be a big event. So I'm looking
forward
to it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating documentary. It really is. And the explanation that you're given, really, you can see it played out on the screen. So we have, all right, let's go back. We have a submarine. It's above water. It's been hit by another vessel, an icebreaker, which just rams right into the sort of the back of the submarine.
The stern, yes.
The stern. Two compartments are filling
with water.
With water.
Rapidly.
Rapidly. And the boat is sinking. And you say some of the crew has gone on deck.
Yes.
So opening the hatch has gone outside to see what's going on. Take it from there.
Okay, so actually, so during this sinking, there were actually three guys that drowned on the surface, so some of the guys got sucked under as the submarine was sinking. So basically, if you're looking
at... How many men on board?
49.
49, all right.
And so basically, 23 of those men went into the water. Three of those guys would drown. One of those guys had responsibility for closing another hatch, which is very important. I'll talk about it in a second. But keep in mind now that Commander Daniel Nieva has just given the order to close Alpha. So three guys go back towards the aft part of the submarine. They go back as far as the rear engine room and they seal themselves in, so all the doors and hatches are closed. Roger Katrina Alvarado, the first lieutenant, he orders him to take the remaining guys from the main control room and go forward to the forward torpedo room and get them out of there. So they're closing hatches behind them, and they're making a break for the forward torpedo room. Keep in mind, this submarine is in 140 feet of water. She's 311 feet long. So as the rear of the ship is sinking, she's dragging. So these guys are running up rooms that are probably at 30 degrees. So they're running uphill, basically. And they're closing these hatches behind them.
Okay, we're gonna let you pick up on this story after we take a short break. But stay with us, because Chris's account of the miracle of the Pococha is a fascinating story.
In 2006, the Colorado Catholic Herald was voted the nation's number one diocesan newspaper in its class. The Herald offers a wide variety of stories on the local, national, and world level, as well as your letters and the best columns in the Catholic press. The Colorado Catholic Herald is a newspaper you can be proud of. If you are registered with a parish in the Diocese of Colorado Springs, you should be receiving the Herald. If not, please call us at 719-866-6492. That's 719-866-6492. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Chris Maserotti, and Chris has produced a documentary film called "The Miracle of the Pococha." And Chris, in our first segment, began to tell us the story, and it is a bit difficult, I think, to imagine, to see this in your mind's eye, exactly what's going on as this submarine is sinking, the tail end going down, the front end sticking up out of the water. I guess that's sort of the visual of the Titanic when it sank too. Didn't we have a visual of it going down on?
Kind of, except the Titanic was opposite. I think she sank bow first.
Oh,
right?
Okay. I'm not
Whereas,
sure.
But something similar, and she was only in 140 feet of water. So the Pococha was. So her stern probably touched the seafloor and was buried in the mud as she was sinking. So if you picture the ship,
before you get into that, I want to remind listeners that that they can see your film documentary on the miracle of the Pococha on EWTN. It's going to air on December 29th at 8 p.m. Mountain Time, and then repeat it again in the wee hours of January 1st, correct? 4 a.m.
4 a.m. 4:30 a.m.
4:30, okay. Also on EWTN. But is the video available for people to own themselves? Or
yes, it certainly is. And the website you can order the video off of is www.themiracleofthepococha.com. Pococha, the easiest way to remember Pococha is the guy's name Paco and half the cha-cha.
P-A-C-O-C-H-A.
So, yep.
Pococha. Okay.
That's available. You ordered off the website, and I'll mail it right out to you.
Very good. Very good. So EWTN, December 29th, 8 p.m. Mountain Time. So before the break, Chris, we're trying to visualize this submarine sinking, stern first, front of the boat up in the air, the crew, the rear two chambers filled with water, and mass confusion, the crew running for the top, for the deck, to get out of there before the whole thing sank, right?
Right.
So why don't you pick it up there?
Okay, So Roger Katrina is taking a group of survivors towards what's called the prow or the bow, and they're going through watertight doors from compartment to compartment, and they're closing them behind them, and they're climbing 30 or 40 degrees because the Pococha's sinking that way. Her stern's on the bottom, so she's sticking out of the water, so she's about 40 degrees, and it's very difficult climbing. So basically what ends up happening is some of the guys don't make it out of the forward battery compartment. They're stuck there. There are some guys in the forward torpedo room. So they start this evacuation, at least of the guys in the forward torpedo room. And so what they do is they start climbing out and going out of the hatch. And probably the first couple guys are jumping tens of feet into the water, maybe 30, 40, 50 feet into the water. But the submarine, keep in mind now, is sinking closer and closer to the water. So as the bow's sticking way out, as the engine rooms flood, she continues to sink in what I would call a counterclockwise. So the stern sinks in a clockwise direction, and then the bow and starts to sink in a counterclockwise direction as she as the engine rooms fill up with water. So guys start jumping out of the forward torpedo room hatch, going up the ladder. They jump out of the hatch into the sea. Three guys make it out. The fourth guy, his name's Hector Panana, as he's trying to come out of the same hatch, he gets out of the hatch, and all of a sudden water's coming in, and he slips in the water as he's coming out of the hatch. And the hatch
has gone underwater.
The hatch is going underwater as he's coming out.
Right.
So he doesn't make it. He falls on the deck, and his left leg is still in the hatch. So the water goes over the hatch, and the hatch is clamshelled on his left leg. So if you can picture this terrible spectacle for this guy, he's sitting on the deck of this huge ship being engulfed by water, and this hatch is clamshelled on his leg, and it'll scissor his leg off. Basically, that's the same dynamic as a scissor. And so he's kicking, and Roger Katrina, the first lieutenant who's directing the evacuation at the bottom of the ladder, sees the water come in, so he races to the top of the ladder, Hector kicks him in the face, knocks his glasses off, and he's trying to shield himself, so he starts pressing up on the latch wheel with all his might. And the first time he said he couldn't do it. The second time he pressed all his might again and he did it. And I'm speculating that what probably happened was Hector felt him pressing, the pressure relieving. So he's thinking, I got to help this guy. So maybe he starts pulling up as well the second time. Between them, they're able to actually force the hatch open, a hatch that's underwater. Now, it can't be very deep yet because otherwise they wouldn't be able to do it. But through adrenaline between the two of them, they can probably do it. So that act of opening that hatch frees Hector Panana's leg, and he's able to make his way to the surface, and that saved his life. But opening a hatch that's underwater is a terrible thing to do for the guys inside, right? So this column of water just ingresses into the submarine and just washes Roger Katrina down the ladder, wipes him out. And it's during this time that Lieutenant Katrina has a near-death experience. If you ever heard that described, where a person's life passes before their eyes. So Roger Katrina sees his whole life pass before his eyes, and the last thing he sees is a vision.
Before we get to the vision, let's make sure we could see where this hatch is. The hatch is not closed, really, is it?
Oh, good point. Good point, Bishop. So basically what happens is, it's believed that when guys were coming out of the hatch, they were pushing up on the latch wheel, because that's typically what you would grab it by. And when they're pressing up, they would tend to rotate that latch wheel clockwise a little bit at a time. And what that does is that puts the deadbolts back out again as though the hatch were closed if you wanted to secure the hatch. That's called dogging the hatch. The deadbolts are called dogs. So the way that the hatch mechanism works is, under normal circumstances, the way it's supposed to work is you close the hatch, you turn the latch wheel clockwise, the dogs go out and they're underneath the lip, so they hold the hatch.
And this is much like a deadbolt on your door. You have to close the door first, then you turn the deadbolt, it moves into the door and secures it. But if that door is open and then the deadbolt is out,
You can't close the door
because the deadbolt keeps hitting against the frame of the door.
Exactly.
And that's basically what's going on here. The hatch can't be closed because these deadbolt sort of things are out and hitting the top of the deck and not allowing the hatch to close.
And that's what sets up the need for a miracle.
All right.
So basically what happens, and it's interesting because the US DOD report says that the hatch closed by itself, but they said Lieutenant Katrina considered it a miracle. And actually the resolution of that fact was what launched the documentary in a sense. So I didn't know that, but anyway, so the hatch closes or tries to close and it can't because the dogs are out. And Roger Katrina is now on the floor with water coming down on top of him, having this near-death experience. The last thing he sees is a vision. And the vision he sees is of a Croatian nun named Maria Petkovic. And the reason he recognizes who she is he read her biography about a year before the accident when he was sick in the Naval Hospital with food poisoning. Maria's nuns were nurses at the Naval Hospital. So Roger read this document. He read this book called Testimony of Love, and it really touched his life. And he had kind of an affinity, a devotion to Maria Petkovic. Not a full-blown devotion, but certainly a deep affinity for her. She really touched his heart.
He knew who she was, and he actually recognized her?
Yes. Yes. In fact, this is beautiful because he recognized her. She was looking at him, and she was holding her crucifix. And it's an image of her that's similar to a picture of her that's in the Testimony of Love. It's a beautiful picture, and I actually sent it to Bill. It'll be in the paper, I think, here in the Catholic paper. So it's a beautiful picture of her when she's about 20 years old, when she founded the Congregation of the Daughters of Mercy. Anyway, he sees this vision of her, and he tells her, "Take me to God," because he figures, we're dead. And he tries to pray this prayer to resign his spirit to God the way he remembered her praying when she was a little girl, because when she was a little girl, she was very sickly and she almost died on two different occasions. And she prayed this prayer, "Lord, I want to go with you so that I can be with you in heaven." So Roger Katrina recalls that prayer as best as he can. He says, "Lord, this afternoon I will be with you." And the next thing he would see is what he described as an explosion of light in his eyes. And as soon as he sees this explosion of light, he's back in reality again, and he's being tossed end over end, you know, washed towards the forward battery compartment, and he hears water still roaring into the submarine. Well, why is water still roaring into the submarine? Because the hatch is dogged and it can't close.
Right.
So this is basically an impossible situation for these guys now, because here's where the catch-22 is. If these guys can't close that hatch, they're going to drown. Okay? And the guys in the next compartment that's sealed probably won't be able to be rescued, because if anybody leaks salt water into that compartment during the rescue, that creates chlorine gas, and those guys will die immediately because it hits the batteries. And I don't know the chemical reaction, but it creates chlorine gas. So the guys in the forward torpedo room drown, and the guys in the forward battery compartment probably aren't rescuable. So anyway, in order to close the hatch, they have to lift it enough to relieve the sea pressure to retract the dogs. And the way you can test this at home is, take your deadbolt while your door's open, put your deadbolt out, gently press it against the door jamb, and then take the latch knob and turn it, and you can turn it. And then try it while you're leaning against it. With that increases the friction force, and with your hand, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the situation these guys were in. So they're in an impossible situation. So when Roger gets washed against the wall of the forward battery compartment, he makes his way, he feels air, compressed air hitting him in the face, and that was from the chief technical officer who blew air to the compartment to help him. Well, it wasn't going to help him because they're flooding from the ceiling, right? But anyway, he can breathe. He this air hitting him in the face, he can breathe. So he breathes some breaths, and he makes his way back to the forward torpedo room ladder, and he climbs it against the force of the rushing water. For anybody that's ever seen the movie Run Silent, Run Deep, there's a scene where they get depth charged and their forward torpedo room hatch pops open. That's pretty much the same situation these guys were in. If you've got that movie, you can look at that. So this lieutenant climbs that ladder in kind of the same situation against the rushing water. And he gets to the top of the ladder, and water's rushing at him from all sides, right? So he grabs the latch wheel, and he starts pressing up on it with all his might. How far
underwater are we at this point?
So according to the Vatican investigation, the minimum depth of the bow at that point was 49 feet. So if you do your physics of the weight of water equals rho gh, you come up with a force of and you multiply that times the area of the hatch lid, you come up with a force of about 4 tons of sea pressure.
And he's trying to push against that.
Exactly, which is impossible. So after seeing this vision of Blessed Maria Petkovic, he does is he grabs the latch wheel with all his might, and he starts pressing up on it. And to his amazement, it starts to spin. It responds. And the latch wheel starts to spin. The dogs retract.
On its own.
On its own. Well, he's got his hand on it, right? And but his strength is totally insufficient to do what is going on, what has just happened. There's no way he could do it himself. So the latch wheel starts to spin. The dogs retract. He said how it didn't break his arm, he has no idea. Because if you imagine you're holding on to something and all of a sudden it starts to spin, You know, it didn't break his arm. And he said when the hatch slammed shut, it basically slammed on his head. How it didn't kill him, he has no idea. And he said he's never heard a sound like that in his life than when that hatch slammed shut.
And so obviously that stopped the seawater from coming in.
Correct.
The boat was not completely flooded, so those who were still in there could now
had a watertight sanctuary.
All right.
At least for the time being.
We're going to pick up with the story, Chris, in just a moment. We'll be back.
ColoradoCatholicHerald.com is the website of the award-winning Colorado Catholic Herald newspaper. For the latest Catholic news, both at home and around the world, log on to ColoradoCatholicHerald.com. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Welcome back. I'm visiting with Chris Maserotti, producer of the documentary film, The Miracle of the Pococha. And Chris has been bringing us now to the very, very dramatic conclusion of this story. But let's remind our listeners, Chris, that your video, your documentary film, will be shown on EWTN on December the 29th, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Repeated again on January 1st, but early in the morning, 4:30 a.m. But also, our listeners have the opportunity to own the video themselves.
Yes, they do, Bishop. The they can order it off of my website. It's www.themiracleofthepococha.com. Pococha is the guy's name, Paco, and half the cha-cha. So that's how you can remember it.
P-A-C-O-C-H-A. A. Very good.
TheMiracleOfThePococha.com.
And one final source of information about this story is our own Colorado Catholic Herald, the Diocesan newspaper of Colorado Springs. In the current issue, there are photographs
yes.
of the Pococha, of Blessed Maria.
Yes, and the picture is the actual image that Roger Katrina saw of her.
And the story itself. Now, I think we had gotten to the point where the ship really, or the submarine, is really underwater. It's sinking. And the first lieutenant, Katrina,
mm-hmm.
having freed the sailor whose leg, or helped to free the sailor whose leg was trapped in there, is now trying to close that hatch to keep water from rushing in. But of course, it's impossible. How many tons of pressure did you say from the water were on that hatch from the outside?
Minimum of 4 tons.
4 tons. And of course, the hatch won't close because, as you call them, the dogs, the deadbolts are out pressing against the top of the boat, and so that pressure is not going to allow him to manually retract those.
Right.
The water pressure is too much to raise it. And
so it's an impossible situation.
It's an impossible situation, and death is impending. And so he's holding on to the wheel. I think we've all seen enough movies. We see the wheel that turns, that closes the hatch. He's holding on to that wheel. Well, virtually able to do nothing. And what happens?
And all of a sudden, it just breaks loose and starts to spin. And the what it did, according to the Vatican investigation, it didn't shear. Because there's a way where you can just be kind of partially, the dogs could be out just enough where the sea pressure could still shoehorn it in. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. So the latch turned a ways. It turned enough where the dogs had to have traveled at least some distance under load. And that's really the only way I can see that they could have concluded after the fact that it was miraculous. They had to look at the dogs. So basically the latch wheel starts to spin under 4 tons of load, which is impossible. And it slams shut on his head. He said it didn't kill him. He has no idea. But that stops the water flow. So as the engine rooms continue to fill with water, the submarine finishes sinking, and they end up on the bottom of the sea at about 120 feet at the top of the submarine. So at that time, they begin to orchestrate the rescue. So the Kiowa Maru had continued onward for about a mile and then stopped and said, boy, we better report this. So they called their insurance agent and said, we think we might have hit something.
The other ship didn't even know it had hit another
ship?
Well,
apparently not. I mean, it seems really negligent. But there were other things going on there that night that I probably shouldn't go into. It's beyond the scope of this. But basically, they continued on for about a mile and a half, and they radioed their agent in Lima. It was that radio communique that the Peruvian Navy keyed on that said, hey, because Admiral Tirado left. The Pococha had just radioed that they were coming in. They were almost home. So he left and went home. When he got home, there was a phone call that said, Admiral, you got to come back. The Pococha, we can't find her. And he's like, what do you mean? We just talked to him. So he comes back and they send search parties out, and the Pococha launched a flare. And then they launched their rescue buoy that says, hey, the Pococha sank here. So they orchestrated the rescue with divers. So they sent to the United States for a diving bell called a McCann Flyaway. And that's supposed to attach itself to the hatch. They have to set it up, but it attaches itself to the hatch, and then you can open the hatch and transport men out. But the plane ran low on fuel, so these guys had to decide, we're going to do a free escape. So the CO2 in the compartment was getting unbearable, and they were getting punchy, and they didn't think they could wait long enough for the diving bell. So Lieutenant Katrina sent a a note up through the ejector tube, the flare ejector tube, that said, "Admiral, we have 22 Iron Men requesting permission to come to the surface." And so Admiral Tirado said, "You know, these guys know a lot better than any of us what they need." So he granted permission, and they instructed the divers to help these guys. So the way they orchestrated the escape is, on the Balao and Guppy 2 class submarines, there's this mechanism, there's this compartment known as an escape trunk. And the hatch that Roger closed with the help of Blessed Maria Pekovich is the top hatch of that compartment. There's a hatch in the ceiling of the forward torpedo room, which is the bottom of the compartment, and there's another hatch in the wall of that tube. So if you picture the tube as a little bit bigger in diameter than the lower hatch lid, which is in the ceiling, that forms a ledge on which several guys can stand. So the way it works is, you go from the room up through the ceiling, through the first hatch, you stand on the ledge, you close that hatch. The deck hatch above you is already closed, because that's the miracle hatch. And the horizontal hatch in the wall is the one that you're going to swim out of. So they flood the compartment with water, and when the pressure equalizes, then you can open that vertical hatch and swim out. So in six groups, they did this. But the problem was, these guys were scared to death, and they knew what they were undertaking was an incredibly dangerous maneuver, because you have the danger of two things. One's the bends, and the other is something that's even more insidious, called gas embolus. And what that is if you picture a balloon on the bottom of a swimming pool, it's maybe, let's say it's 3 inches in diameter. If you raise it to the top of the swimming pool, it expands because the pressure decreases. Well, that's what happens to your lungs.
And they had to swim quickly.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Because they wouldn't have enough air.
They didn't have enough air. They didn't have enough time. And they were able to at least breathe from some divers' air tanks. But the divers' air tank, they couldn't rely on through the whole thing, because, like I say, you have the danger of gas embolus. So it's totally counterintuitive to breathe your air out as you're swimming up, right? I mean, but that's what they had to do. So these guys are scared to death. And so when they first started this maneuver, when they opened the horizontal hatch, this bright, brilliant light shone into the submarine. And Roger said it was so bright that it cast shadows on everybody. And it was a lot brighter of a light than what you'd expect, the ambient light from like the rescue divers' lanterns. And three or four of these guys called it what they called a divine light. And it gave these guys courage, because it told them a couple things. One, it gave them the idea, hey, we're not that far from the surface. And the second thing was, God's helping us. So, you know, this really gave them courage. And so they executed this maneuver in these six groups. And actually, that horizontal hatch, the hatch in the wall, the vertical hatch that they swim out of, that hatch was broken when Roger first enlisted on the Pococha, and Roger fixed that hatch. So, and that, actually the hatch broke again during the rescue, and the divers had to fix it with wrenches, but they were able to execute that. So within 24 hours, everybody on the submarine that survived the initial sinking got out. One interesting note was...
And how many was that? How many?
That was 22 men.
22 men, all right.
So that pretty much climaxes the story. And in fact, I'd like to say one thing. One of the guys in the documentary, his name is Freddie Merga, he talks about when he was swimming up, he felt somebody pulling him up. He felt this force pulling him up, and he thought it was a diver. But when he got to the top, the divers were further away. And it's really interesting, because another of the sailors, after we showed him a pilot of the documentary, he had a conversion back to his Catholic faith over this documentary. And he told me in a cab after that, in a taxi cab after that showing, he said, "You know what Freddie Merga said about being pulled?" He said, "I felt that, but I never told anybody because I didn't think they would believe me."
So we have a sort of a second miracle or series of miracles.
Three of them, basically.
Yeah.
Three different types. There was another guy who said he saw a vision of Our Lady of Mercedes. It's a vision of the Blessed Mother. And he was the chief technical officer, the one that engineered the escape, basically.
You know, this is a very interesting and unique kind of miracle, at least from a couple of perspectives. First, most of the miracles we hear of and that are submitted to the Holy See for the beatification or canonization of someone usually involves a cure of some kind.
Yes.
There's petition, intercession for the cure, either of oneself or of someone else. So this is not a miracle of being cured, but of being saved in the midst of a terrible tragedy and accident. But the other thing that strikes me is, unless I miss some of the details, there's no particular prayer for intercession, is there? In other words, this is the absolutely gratuitous intervention of God and not following upon any particular prayers of the crew, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure they prayed. I know they prayed before then.
Through the intercession
of Blessed Maria. That's correct. Yeah. That's a true statement. Yeah. And in fact, that's why the connection is so important. And you know what, Bishop? That's a fantastic segue into Maria Petkovich. Okay. So I'll take what you just said, and what I'd like to say is Maria Petkovich, she traveled the seas. She went from Croatia to South America, Argentina, Chile, and Paraguay is where she started founding her orphanages and charitable centers. And the thing that's really amazing about this woman is she had tremendous faith and she had tremendous love for the poor. She was like a Mother Cabrini or a Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And she started her ministry to orphans in the aftermath of World War I, where there were plenty of orphans due to the carnage that the war wrought, right? And so when we were doing this documentary, we asked one of the nuns who was 95 years old at the time we did the interview in 2005, we any nun that knew Blessed Maria, we said, do you know of any miracles that Blessed Maria prayed for and received during her lifetime? And this beautiful little nun, she Sister Bogoljuva is her name. She's in the documentary, but this story isn't in the documentary. So you're only going to hear it here. So this nun says, very matter of fact, and this is a beautiful testimony, she says, there are many stories about our mother foundress, but I'm only going to tell you about one because I was there. She said, we were on a ship, and she didn't say specifically whether they were coming from Croatia to Argentina. I can't remember. I suppose that's probably where they were going. But she said this terrible storm enveloped the ship, and it was basically tossing the ship every which way, and the captain and the crew had given up being able to save the ship. And this nun said, I started to cry, because the nun was a novice at that time. She was 15 years old, so that would have been 1925. And she started to cry, and Blessed Maria Petkovich said, my child, why are you crying? And she says, because mother, we're gonna die. And she says, no, my child, she said, we're going to pray. And so she prayed, and according to Sister Bogoljuva, that nun calmed the sea. And if you look at the testimony, the transcript, it doesn't sound believable, but it's like when you watch this nun giving this testimony, you look at her and you're thinking, this nun is not lying. So if you think about it, you have a bunch of maritime sailors on a vessel that's in distress in 1925, and this woman's prayers save their day.
Blessed Maria has prior connection with the seas.
Yes.
Great.
She's from the island of Korčula, which is the island that Marco Polo's from.
Ah, all right. Well, we're going to have to take another break, our final break, and we'll be back to conclude our visit with Chris Messerotti.
The Colorado Catholic Herald's blog offers a chance for you to be heard on Catholic issues. Click on the red blog link at coloradocatholicherald.com and join the discussion. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Welcome back. Visiting here today with Chris Messerotti. And if you've just tuned in on this program, unfortunately, you have missed a remarkable a story that Chris has just told. Chris is the producer of a fascinating documentary film called The Miracle of the Pococha, a miracle attributed to the prayers, to the work of Blessed Maria
Petkovich.
I got these P words confused in my head. Okay, and whom I had not heard of really myself until until I saw this this documentary. But Chris, thank you for that. And just to remind our listeners again that they can really see this, not only hear it as they're doing on radio, but see it in video form on EWTN on December 29th when your hour-long documentary will be shown, 8 p.m. December 29th Mountain Time, and then repeated again at 4 a.m. on 4:30 a.m. on January the 1st, also on EWTN, but also able to get a copy of this video for themselves by going to your website, which is
www.themiracleofthepococha.com. Pococha is Paco and half the cha-cha. So think of a guy named Paco that only has time to dance half the cha-cha.
All right. And then also in the current issue of our Colorado Catholic Herald, there are some photographs and also this same story in much shorter form. So in the few minutes that we have left, Chris, you and I were talking during the break about what you called some of the little miracles that you witnessed, you experienced during the making of the documentary, correct?
Yes, I would call them little miracles, yeah. Coincidences. So I'm going to start out with one, which is really a neat one, and that is when we started to do the script for this, I wanted to do a segment where we juxtaposed this miracle against the miracle Christ talks about if you cast a mountain into the sea with your faith. Because on the night of the miracle with the Pococha, I envisioned the sea being cast away, just for a split second, the sea being cast away from this hatch, this mountain of metal, which was the submarine. And so when I was first flying down there, I told Fernando Verano, the producer — I'm the executive producer, so Fernando's the guy that knew, he knows how to make the movie. He's the one that did everything. So basically, I said, Fernando, I'd like a mountain or a hill or something, and not knowing the geography of San Lorenzo, Lima, Peru. And Fernando says, I've got a mountain for you. Well, the accident happened just a couple miles, 3 miles north of San Lorenzo Island. And San Lorenzo Island looks like a mountain that's been cast into sea. It's amazing. So that's one little miracle. Another little miracle, this is one I really like to talk about, is in the summer of 2006, we were 2 years into production, and the movie kept getting longer because there was more stuff to put into it. But things were starting to happen that were making it more difficult, one of which was Fernando moved to the United States to work for EWTN, which really made things difficult for communicating with the editors and the guys in Peru. And I thought we were going to fail. So all I was doing was spending money, and I didn't think we were going to finish the film. And so I was very depressed. And we had, at the end of the movie, this segment that compares Maria Petkovic to St. Rose of Lima and St. Martin de Porres. So I asked Fernando if he had some movie footage from his production company, any archive footage of St. Rose of Lima and St. Martin de Porres. Fernando says, I have some of St. Rose, but I don't have anything of St. Martin de Porres. I says, can you do me a favor? Can you call Julio, the production assistant? Can you call him and see if you can get some footage? So Fernando calls Julio and he says, Julito, I need you to go down to the Dominicans, the center of town, and who have a statue of St. Martin de Porres, and ask them if you can film. And Julio says, Fur, I gotta go. And Fur's like, what do you mean you gotta go? He says, I gotta go right now. There's a procession right now going on right past our building. So he grabs the beta cam, or the mini DV cam, races to the bottom of the stairs, stands in the street, and that's the footage that's in the documentary.
Just as the statue was going by.
Just as it was going by. So that's another little miracle. Another one I would like to talk about briefly is when we juxtaposed the miracle of casting the mountain into the sea against the Pococha in the long version of the documentary, which isn't available right now. I apologize for that. We mentioned how if you have faith and do not waver, you can say to this mountain, be lifted up and cast into the sea, and it would obey. And we start the movie and end the movie with that scripture verse or that idea. So when we had the premiere at the naval base in Callao, which the vice president of Peru attended, and the gentleman who refloated the submarine, Admiral Eduardo Darcor, he was the commander-in-chief of the Peruvian Navy. When we had the premiere there, we were getting ready to go do some sightseeing that day before the premiere, which was at night. And we met Fernando down in Lima. And Fernando said, "Hey, bro, did you go to Mass today?" And I said, "No, I was too tired, man. I missed. I apologize." I says, and Fernando tells me, he says, "Do you know what the gospel reading was?" And I said, "No, what?" He said, "You know the reading in the documentary?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "That was the gospel reading for that day." So I look back on things like that, and those are historical events and sequences that you can only see in hindsight. It's like the wake from a ship, and you see the hand of God in the wake.
Right. If they're not, I mean, if they're not miracles, they are certainly,
yeah,
there are certainly little interventions,
little
graces of God, yeah, that send you a message. Yeah,
you bet. And the last one is, when we were doing this, we needed somebody to master the film. And there was a guy at work that I knew just by Jim. That's all I knew him. I'd see him in the hall. And my friends said, "Hey, if you need some help with this, why don't you talk to this guy, Jim McCombs? He's got a production company." And I says, "Okay." So I sent this Jim McCombs an email. And he says, "Yeah, I'd be happy to do this." And so he says, "Come back to the lab." So I go back to the lab, and I realize it's the Jim that I always saw that I never knew what his last name. Well, Jim's a Southern Baptist, but he's married to a Catholic. And Jim went down with me to the premiere, and the nuns really had a big impact on him. Jim just, he calls them my sisters. They're like the lilies of the field. And so those beautiful nuns, they really had a big effect on Jim. Jim jokingly says, "If I'd have been there another week, they'd have converted me." So anyway, Jim mastered this film. And like Fernando and Maria Salazar and everybody who's worked on this movie, everybody worked for bargain basement wage or nothing, or both, you know. And there's a lady here locally who's a wonderful copyright lawyer who helped us out as well. So, Wendy, thank you. God bless you guys. And it's just been a wonderful, once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Chris, who moved this forward? I mean, the incident that you've described, you said, took place in 1988. Blessed Maria was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 19...
I want to say... Oh, she was beatified in 2003.
Oh, 2000.
Actually... Yeah, she was beatified June 6th of 2003.
So what, was that 15 years?
15 years,
is all. Who was responsible? Was it her community that was responsible for sort of responding to the account of this miracle and trying to move her beatification forward?
So that's exactly what happened. So Roger Katrina, when he said, "This is a miracle," he told that to one of the nuns at the congregation. And they kind of half believed it and half didn't. Well, when the Mother General, Sister Maria Goretti, came to visit him that year, one of the nuns told her, and something touched her heart. She said, "Sisters, this is a miracle." It really, she really believed in it. And they didn't think Roger Katrina was available. They thought he was fighting the Shining Path down in the jungles during the 80s. That was the big push against the communists. Anyway, they didn't think Roger Katrina was around. So she left a message for him that, "Can you please call me? I got to go back to Rome. I'd like to talk to you." He happened to be in Lima that day, and he went and talked to her, and she taped the account. And like Bishop Salvador was saying in the documentary, she took that tape recording to the postulator, Father Lombardi, and he listened to it and said, "I think you're right. I think this is a miracle." So the Vatican put together a team, with two Italian submarine engineers from the Italian Navy, and they came and they studied this for like 12 years. So at the end of that 12 years, they concluded this was indeed a miracle. So that's an amazing story.
As I said earlier, I'm fascinated by this miracle because, to tell you the truth, they're actually... since I've been in this diocese, two miracles have been reported to promote. One beatified man and the foundress of a community looking for beatification. But again, both involving cures. This is what you hear of so often. Blessed John Newman just beatified.
Yes.
Also, the miracle of a cure. And so there's the possibility of looking at medical evidence. This had to be based simply on the account of, for instance, of the first Lieutenant Katrina and others, right? It was just their word.
I don't think it could just have been their word. I don't think it would have been doable if it was just their word. I think there's physical evidence that they have. And the, as an engineer, the only thing I can think of is that they had to see the marks on the dogs. Okay. Because the dogs would tell the tale that there would have to be a flat spot on those dogs from the pressure
right.
of the sea. And it would have to be of such a nature that you could see that it didn't shear, it didn't shoehorn,
right.
but that the dogs traveled from point A to point B, even if it's half an inch, under load.
Right. Okay.
To me, so that's how they
could
do it.
So there is that physical objective kind of.
I think. I was never able to obtain the information from the Vatican. They wouldn't. I could never get my hands on the information. So I'm going by faith and from an engineering standpoint, from conjecture as far as an educated guess, what is the one thing they could look at after the fact to say, this is truly miraculous? I think it had to be the dogs.
Chris, has your work on this documentary brought you spiritually close to Blessed Maria? Is there a relationship you have with her now?
Yes, there is. Sometimes I will talk to Blessed Maria. Sometimes I'll pray to Blessed Maria. Probably not enough, but you know, it's funny. Whenever I see her picture in the movie, no matter how many times I've seen it, I start to cry. She's just such a beautiful, beautiful saintly nun. And sometimes my prayer is just, God bless you, Blessed Maria. God bless you.
Well, God has blessed her. I enjoyed watching the documentary. You're indicating that you thought it would be a wonderful idea for Blessed, and we hope someday Saint
yes.
Maria to be declared by the church to be the patroness of
submariners.
Makes sense to me.
Well, you know, there's really an interesting thing when you were talking about Cardinal Newman. I learned this like a few weeks ago when I was watching EWTN. The man who was cured saw a video on Cardinal Newman or a talk show about Cardinal Newman on EWTN. And he remembered him. And it was like a Roger Katrina kind of event. And when he was ill, he said, please, Cardinal Newman, help me so that I can be ordained.
We're coming to the end of our time, Chris. And I want to do one last reminder to our listeners that they can see this remarkable video on EWTN on January 29th at 8 p.m. and repeat it again on January 1st at 4:30 a.m. Or they can go to your website, themiracleofthepacocha.com.
Paco and half the cha-cha.
And that will let them know how they could get a copy for themselves. Now, ordinarily, what we do at the conclusion of these programs is I say a short prayer and give a blessing. I'll be happy to give that blessing, but I want to turn this back to you because we only have a few seconds left, but I'd like you just to repeat again, slowly and prayerfully, that prayer that the First Lieutenant Katrina said he uttered as he was convinced that he was facing death. Let's do that.
Lord, we want to go with you so that we can be with you in heaven. Amen.
It's a great Advent prayer and a great Christmas prayer. Thank you, Chris, and to all
Thank
of
you,
our,
Bishop.
All of our listeners. May the blessing of Almighty God come upon you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Join us each week as Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs discusses topics relevant to your life and your faith. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Catholic Radio Network and the Diocese of Colorado Springs. If there is a topic that you'd like to hear covered by Bishop Sheridan Presents, please call the Catholic Radio Network at 970-669-8000.